Well, as part of the new era, every day around this time, 11 o'clock, that's when we used to start the show. Now we're entering hour three. We're going to do a little thing we call the rundown. I think I definitely prefer it as a third hour reset as well. It just feels a little a little bit more natural to the cadence of the morning show. All right, Ja Morant is on his Grizzly in Berlin. He's there. Grizzlies, of course, what do they play Thursday? You know, because what I've noticed, as you know, Jason, an avid European traveler, I never adjusted to the time change.
You didn't?
No, it literally never did. I mean, because you know, it takes God knows how long to get over there. You know, 16 hours to get over there. Then you know, all things considered with time change, things like that. You know, we were over there for like 6 days, and I just was getting tired at like 3 o'clock. You know, every day it never changed. So I understand why you get there Sunday or early Monday, and you got to take 3 to 4 days before you even think about playing a basketball game because your body has to adjust, you know, to the time change. That was another was over. I hated it. I hated the time difference, and being ahead by 6 hours was the worst, because like everything that was happening in America wasn't happening over there until like 1 o'clock in the morning. The
stuff you cared about.
Yeah, like the NBA finals were going on, for example, right? Could not watch them. No chance. And they had a Serbian in them, Nikola Jokic. But I couldn't watch them because those games weren't starting until 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. So absolutely no chance to do it. Now, if you're over here, it works great because these games are happening at 1 o'clock, you know, our time. So that's fantastic. Ja Morant's there. Now, we'll see if he plays. That's the big question. Will he play in Europe? I know this matters to so many people, whether he will play. It doesn't matter to me. It doesn't matter to Jason. But
it kind of matters to me. I don't want him to get hurt.
Well, exactly. It matters in that sense.
Then you can't trade him, can you?
Right.
He got seriously injured.
Exactly. You know, and
which is some of the Grizzlies have obviously, we're already here, have said they're considering and looking at it in terms of trading him. What you don't want him to do is to get hurt doing it.
Right. I mean, if you get like a Ty Jerome special calf strain.
What you said in the first hour is the smartest way to put it. Like, you don't need more film on Ja Morant if you were one of these teams. Or if you're the Grizzlies and you feel like you're trying to convince one of these teams, tell them to go watch the 40-plus performance against Philadelphia. Yep. And that's the key is you keep him as safe as possible at this point right now in terms of, you know, where he is with this injury, the contusion, whatever else. You don't risk hurting it anymore or hurting something else with him trying to put on for some other team, right? Trying to do, you know, put on but basically a display, a showcase for another team. No, you don't need him getting hurt. So it doesn't make any sense to me. And I think having him there is sort of your way of telling the NBA, all right, look, you know, we intended for this to be big too. We know we wanted Ja to be in Berlin. We wanted him to be in London. He's here with the team, but you guys understand where we're at. We're at a point of no return with him. So my point is just having him there should suffice for the NBA, which clearly has to understand that you've reached what feels like a, you know, sort of a corner with Ja Morant.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, about that trade, Tim McMahon and Brian Windhorst do a podcast, and this came up, you know, because the Grizzlies have said, hey, we're not just going to give him to you. We're not just going to give him away like the Hawks did with Trae Young. And this is what Tim McMahon had to say on that podcast about that.
You know, Shams reported that the Grizzlies are looking for young players and, you know, multiple picks for Ja. Good luck with that because, you know, the feedback that we got on Ja wasn't any more favorable than the feedback that we got on Trae. As a matter of fact, in some cases, it was even worse. And again, he's not attacking the rim nearly like he used to be. He did recently have a 40-point game that was kind of like a reminder or even an indication of, hey, if I want to, I still can. How often does he want to? How often is he even available? He's a bad jump shooter who's shooting more jump shots than ever. And I'll just quote an East executive from then. The combination of pain in the ass, injury prone, not that good anymore, and big contract is a bad one.
All right, let's burn that tape.
Well, we don't want him anywhere around the deal. I mean, he's been a known Ja hater. Ja stands for just averages.
That's right. That is true.
Ja's given a lot of reason, but let's be real. McMahon's a hater. So anything coming through his lips in terms of what the return should be probably be taken with a grain of salt. It's going to be jaded, bro.
Fair enough. Fair enough. But I did want to at least pass that along. Like there are,
no, I appreciate it.
There is skepticism out there, and I think we would probably share it. You know, there was some deal going on, like around on Friday that the Bucks would send Bobby Portis, Kyle Kuzma, and Ryan Rollins for the absolutely no way will they do that. I mean, no, if they like honestly, people need to understand how big a haul that would be if they did that. I don't think they will. I do not think they will send out a fan favorite like Bobby Portis and a promising young player for Ja Morant. Obviously, I do think they would be willing to get off the Kyle Kuzma contract, but I just don't believe that you're going to get what the Grizzlies, what the Grizzlies say they want. And that's going to become an interesting inflection point for them, Jason, because, you say you have to get all these things, you have to get picks, you have to get young player. But, like, what if we get to, January the 30th, no deal has materialized, and this is still lingering around the team? You know, are you really willing to take this into the offseason, to take this into next year with an unhappy Ja Morant, on this team? I mean, I think that's what's going to get tested.
Yeah, I don't think you take it that far. I don't.
Just come down on your ask.
At some point, you're going to have to go with what you got. I don't know. Maybe they're willing to do that. I'm not putting him back on the floor for those same reasons. This guy could suffer it could be an Achilles injury, mm-hmm. Then of what value is he to me in trying to move him out? So my point, John, if that came to be and I didn't like anything, which is possible, up until the trade deadline, because they've got me between a rock and a hard place. They know I want to trade him. I'm sitting him the rest of the way. That's got to be the key, and then it has to get done in the off season. That said, it just feels like, the likelihood is, sure. How much more is it going to improve the offers once you're done? To John's point, you might have your best shot right now trying to trade him off to somebody who, I just keep using Minnesota as the example, someone who's topped out where they are, but feel like, okay, if we've got John here, particularly at that position, point guard, where we've struggled, it takes us to the next level. Doing that now, as opposed to trying to convince someone of that, not too far removed from that 40-point-plus game. McMahon referenced it, too, against Philly. You can tell yourself, oh, yeah, we'll do it. We'll have 2 years of control after this, and we'll make the move. That seems more likely now than later. So I get maybe it's just me and my naivete, but my hope is that it gets done before you've decided to do this. We all feel like you're pretty much here and don't have a choice, that whatever it is. John, I'm not saying you take a bad, bad deal,
mm-hmm.
but, maybe it's coming down in another area, whatever it is. It has to be done by the deadline, it feels like. I just don't see this going to the summer. Maybe I'm wrong.
No, I don't want it to go into the summer because I don't think that helps anybody. No, I don't think it's...
You can't play him if you do that.
Right.
He can hurt. Well, and you don't want him around,
right?
Those guys, and your young guys, the cowards, and all that. Not bought in.
And again, it's like what Dan was talking about. Like you're trying to get to the life after Ja. You're trying to build the team after Ja.
Correct.
And so it makes it harder to do that, when you still have Ja. If we all agree that like the off ramp is coming, one way or the other, get to the off ramp.
It might not be trying to wait on picks and young player. You might not get that. Might just be young player. Might just be picks.
Might.
And a bunch of contracts you're going to end up dumping off.
It might be bad contracts. You're right.
But my point, the idea is you're going to get some ideal where you get both. Probably pretty far-fetched.
Right.
Because, again, the whole league knows where you are.
And
your leverage has been
exactly.
Lessened.
And I know that people don't like to hear this because it's unsexy and it doesn't replace the excitement that Ja Morant brings. Believe me, I understand that. But the value in trading Ja at this point, in my opinion, that the value that you're going to get is by leaning all the way into the rebuild. That's the value. You have these two picks coming up in the lottery. We'll see how good they are. You have Zach Edey coming back ideally at some point.
Well, Phoenix is not going to be in the lottery.
It won't be there.
I don't know if it'll be two. That switches to Orlando's right now. It's Phoenix is. I think whichever one's better there.
Okay, so
I'm just saying it's not necessarily two lottery picks. With the way Phoenix is playing.
You could if you play this wrong, you could wind up with no lottery picks, right? If you scrape it to the play and you have no lottery picks.
If you both, Phoenix was good and you scraped your way in,
right? So. You need to trade Ja so that, you can have a chance at the lottery, in my opinion. That's the value. because that's the way back. I mean, in my, you know, if you trade Ja, and I guess that's kind of where they're at. It's like they can't necessarily not, they're kind of in this no man's land where it's like, all right, are we a play-in team? Are we a lottery team? We're kind of flirting with each one.
It's the same thing right now with Phoenix better than Orlando. You're getting Orlando's pick, which right now would be 17th because they'd be one of the lower playoff teams.
Yeah, that's tough.
Yeah. Your pick is the lottery pick.
Right now.
You know, right now, which is 10th or so at 17 and 22. You're in that 10th position. But my point, that don't look anywhere near the high hopes we had for earlier. We were talking about Phoenix maybe being a top five, top three pick.
Right, because if you start getting into
it. It starts switching to that pick not coming from Phoenix if they stay this good. It's going to switch over to Orlando.
I need the Grizzlies to get a top eight pick. That's what I need them to do. Because if they do that, they are basically guaranteed, I think, to get, one of...
You're trying to get Filon.
Acuff, Filon. Mm-hmm. Fleming's probably not going to be in that mix because he's probably going to go high. But yes, like one of those guards. I mean, you got to definitely... Now, you know, people will talk about Michael Brown Jr. at Louisville. I have not been impressed. He's also a little older than most freshmen. He's already 20. So, you know, I think that's part of it. But, yeah, Filon, if you can get, you know, you might be able to get Filon at 9, maybe 10. But, I mean, that's where you got to be. You know, you're not going to, you know, if you make the play-in, and what do you pick if you make the play-in? 15 or something like that? Yeah, you're not going to get Filon at 15. You're not going to get Acuff at 15. So,
well, you can jump. I mean, Dallas lost and then jumped.
That's
you know
true.
What I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's not all. You don't stay in that position necessarily.
Yeah.
You're thrown into the lottery.
Maybe Acuff would be there at 15 if that's exactly where you land. But yeah, I would do this as quickly as possible to maximize the draft equity. I know the Grizzlies say they're not there right now, but I would hope that they can get there at some point because, you know, you're trying to rebuild and you want to do it quickly. You want to do a quick rebuild like they did last time. It was a quick rebuild. You get Ja Morant, boom. You're back in the thing. Now, that was the number two pick. You're not going to get that this year, most likely. But, who knows? Get it. Give yourself a chance. Give yourself a chance to maximize it. So, Ja Morant's on the trip to Berlin. We'll see if he plays.
All right. Oregon's got its next quarterback. Probably means a lot for the quarterback that's still there. We're waiting on a deadline to come on Dante Moore and a decision after losing to Mendoza and Indiana last couple of days there in the semifinals. We did a game that we talked about and so impressed by both Mendoza and Indiana's defense. Remember, Dante threw a pick on the opening play there. Oregon's moving on. Is it Raiola? Is that how you pronounce
Raiola,
Dylan's?
Yeah.
Raiola
is
how you pronounce Dylan's last name. He is transferring from Nebraska to Oregon. He's number 6 in the Athletics transfer quarterback rankings, the second highest ranked uncommitted quarterback, just leaves Sam Leavitt from Arizona State. And remember, Raiola is the sort of Patrick Mahomes lookalike. Patrick, I believe, is his goddad, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he also looks a lot like him, but he's 6'3", 230 pounds, spent last two seasons with the Cornhuskers, starting 22 games, threw for 4,819 yards, 31 touchdowns, 17 interceptions in those two seasons, and looks like he's going to be Dan Lanning's next guy. My guess is he is not doing this. He is not committing unless he feels pretty good that Dante Moore is headed out of there. And why would Dante Moore not be? Even if you are the number 2 pick in the draft, you have to go if you are Dante Moore, the number 2 pick behind Mendoza. Mm-hmm. You have to go. This is a no-brainer. You're top 5, top 10. You're going. You're not taking the chance of coming back. So what it looks like is news both that Dante Moore will indeed be announcing here shortly that he's declaring for early entry into the NFL draft, but also your next Oregon star quarterback, because keep in mind, Dan Lanning's got to keep one at Oregon, got to get over the hump. And they did not do that this year. Looks like it's going to be Raiola. Do you like it? Does it make sense?
I mean, yeah, it makes sense. You know,
is he elite?
I don't know if I'd put him in that category.
I haven't seen him get to elite yet. Just kind of solid from what I've seen so far. But maybe in that offense, you'll put up the big numbers and raise your profile and your stock.
Yeah, I mean,
you NFL that, quality.
Yeah, here's the chance, right? This is the one. So, I think I like Sam Leavitt a little more at LSU than I do Raiola at Oregon. But you know, I mean, I trust that he'll have the best possible development at Oregon. You know, so I'm sure he'll elevate, hit a new level. Sam Levitt going from Arizona State to LSU.
Yes.
Really, really good. I guess he was the backup plan to Damond Williams, who went back to Washington. What a mess. What a mess that was.
That's done? He's with LSU? Uncommitted.
Yeah, Sam Levitt just committed in the last hour.
Okay, Gotcha.
But Damond Williams, after all that, went back to Washington.
There had been talk he was going. Thank you for the update.
He couldn't pay, or didn't want to pay that buyout, right?
Mm-hmm.
Some guys paid buyouts. Auburn, for example, had a buyout in Chad Baker-Mazzara's contract.
Yep.
But they didn't make him pay it. They actually said, you know what, kid, just have at it. We're not going to fight you over the buy. And some guys had to actually pay the buyout, but it still made financial sense to go, you know, even with the buyout, because they just made so much more, they could still afford it. So, yeah, in this case, Damond Williams was going to go to LSU most likely, but didn't want to pay that Washington buyout.
I don't see our man Marcus Scott in the athletic transfer. Marcus Stokes in the transfer QB ranking.
Well, that's their sleep. They're asleep right now. What about Air Nolan? He in there?
Aaron?
Air.
Air.
Air. That's the best name in the football.
How do you spell his last name?
N-O-L-A-N-D. Nolan.
Yeah, no, he's not here yet.
Man, come on, Charles. Come on, Chuck. We got to get some ranked guys.
I mean, they go to 30. And so Ashton Daniels is.
And those are all like starters. Yeah. That's why. Yeah. Like Marcus Stokes wasn't a Division I guy last year. But it's setting up pretty well for a fascinating quarterback room. I'll say that. Air Nolan and Marcus Stokes, that excites me. One of those quarterbacks has to be good. Has to be. They're too decorated to come out of high school not to be.
Our man Byron Brown was number 5 on the list. Mestemaker was 3.
Yep. Oklahoma State and both following their former American coaches to their next stops.
Right. We mentioned they got railed with 6th.
I mean, Memphis football has never had a quarterback room of 2 5-4-star or better quarterbacks, ever. I mean, this is new territory.
Where's Lagway going?
He's visiting
Is
somewhere.
Is that talk out there?
He's visiting somewhere high profile, I saw.
He's still uncommitted.
Yeah. Where did I see he was visiting, man? Ole Miss.
There you go.
That's what it is.
Yep.
Yep.
Their backup plan. Now, by the way, there's going to be a lawsuit about this quarterback. They ain't going to get that done, though.
He's committed to Baylor.
With Chamblin.
Lagway is, but he's still visiting. He's still visiting Ole Miss. Yep. It's like old school high school recruiting. Like you commit and then like, oh, I'm taking some visits.
And ask for more money.
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt about that. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen with Chambliss because, I mean, Diego Pavia played on it all year. Right?
I mean, yes. I think he had an injunction and they just said, play football.
That's what he's trying to get. Yeah, he's trying to get the year-long injunction.
Man, if they could get Trinidad. Woo.
And it somehow lasted. Now, he got that injunction granted, I want to say, in like the spring.
Yeah.
And it lasted, you know, long enough.
Yeah. And his was a JUCO injunction, thing. Right? Because if it's JUCO years, they're trying to make it not count.
Now, I'm not sure what the case is with Trinidad. I know it's probably similar. But, you know, as we all know, it's case by case with this stuff. So, anyway.
He has a nice backup, the pros.
That's right. That's right. Jason's got him going top 10.
Did get an all-Sun Belt, was it defensive end? Defensive lineman?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jamon Tapp.
Starting to build out a roster portal. Here.
My it's man Huff along. Bringing over his people. We said it was going to be some
Everybody
of them.
Everybody be patient.
This is an all-conference performer. We're bringing in 6'3", 275.
There we go. Hey, close the gap.
Close that gap.
Huff. Closing.
Spot the ball.
Huff.
Spot the ball and close the gap, man. That's the idea here. So, all right, we'll come back. Jason Fitz is going to join us on the other side. We'll talk to him about the college football playoff. We'll talk to him about the number one pick. We'll talk to him about the NFL playoffs. All that and more on the other side. J&J 90.9 FM, ESPN. Jason Fitz is the host of Yahoo Sports Daily. Also hosts on Fox Sports Radio. Friend of the show. Been too long. And we couldn't have a new first show in our time slot without having on our man Jason Fitz, and he joins us now. Fitz, what's up, man?
Man, I'm so stinking happy for you boys. A new time slot, new opportunity. But same two dudes that have just been two of the nicest and easiest people to root for in this business for a decade plus. Like, this is just so awesome for Memphis. It's awesome for you guys. I'm honored to get to spend a little time with you. But mostly, like, heck yeah, I'm just proud of you guys. Like, way to go. Congratulations.
But very kind Appreciate of it, you. Brother. And I know you mean Thank that you. When you say it. And the respect and the admiration is certainly mutual.
All day long.
And I think you know that. All right, a lot to get to today. Is it just obvious at this point, Fitz, after his performance in the college football playoff in this season, that Fernando Mendoza is going number one to the Raiders?
Oh, yeah. No, and look, here's the thing. This is the most beautiful thing about the college football playoff. And Titans fans, I said this last year, that one of the downers last year is that Cam Ward didn't make it, because having these quarterbacks have the opportunity to take on the best teams is important. It gives you a real chance, because we spend so much of the time arguing about what they've done against bad throughout the course of the year. So keep in mind that what Fernando's done in two college football playoff games have been against two top 10 passing defenses in all of college football, and he's absolutely annihilated them. He's gone hot at the absolute best time. He's dissected them. He's used his legs at an athletic level I think people are really surprised by. But even more than that, his pinpoint accuracy, no matter where he's throwing the ball from, I have fallen in love with Fernando Mendoza over the course of the last month. I sat down on my couch before the Big Ten championship game, and I literally said out loud with my dogs on my lap, I said, "All right, buddy, show me what you got." And then that first drive, he got knocked a you-know-what out, came right back and kept throwing. And you look at what, over the last month, Ohio State, Alabama, Oregon, he has sliced them and diced them like they're Middle Tennessee State. So absolute impressive run by him. He's clearly the number one quarterback. I think he's clearly a franchise quarterback. It's up to an organization to make the best of him. But, yeah, there's no doubt. Turn the thing in now. Let's all start singing Fernando by ABBA. We're going
to
be good.
So with the Bears and a guy like Caleb, it was easy to say, well, you want a Ben Johnson, an offensive genius, and a guy who hopefully can pull the things out of Caleb Williams that you want. I just, with this Mendoza question, is he such a, you know, I don't want to say finished product, no one is coming out of college, but is he at a point where it won't, you guys don't need some hot OC, you know, to be the head coach so he can pull the best out of him? You can go DC. I mean, I think John's told me that Flores is the favorite for you guys' job. Is it a deal where Mendoza gives you the option of getting whatever kind of coach is just the best fit and doesn't necessarily have to be an offensive guy?
To me, the answer is no to that. And I've seen the Flores reports. I'm going to say loudly on this. I don't know if you guys saw this yesterday, but now it's been widely reported. The NFL has officially filed the paperwork at the Supreme Court to try and force Flores' lawsuit against the league to go into arbitration instead of court.
Wow.
I just have a hard time believing you can be sitting on the precipice of taking the NFL to court to the point that they're fighting it in the Supreme Court level or trying to get the Supreme Court to hear it. I don't think you can be suing 32 owners and one owner is still going to hire you in that situation. I do not believe Flores or Gruden, as long as they are filed in active lawsuits against the NFL, are going to be head coaches. Why? You're not going to give Flores a microphone and the opportunity to speak on that over and over and over again. That's just, I think it's going to happen. But more importantly, look at, just across the board with young quarterbacks. And I'm working on a long-form think piece that's not quite ready yet. I have a bunch of stats and research help on it, on the lack of success in the first 3 years of first overall picks. And it's just, statistically, if you look at a team that picks first overall, they don't win games. The Bears are an exception being this good in 2 years. In fact, if you go all the way back to the year 2000, if you go all the way back to then, only one quarterback selected first overall has had a winning record as a starter his rookie year, and that was Andrew Luck. Every other one has been below 500. So I think what that speaks to is it's a long trajectory to get right usually.
Yep.
I want an offensive mind that's going to be there the whole time. So unfortunately, there are some defensive coordinators I like, but the problem is if they have any success at all, you're going to be hiring another offensive coordinator in year two, year three, year four. I don't want new offenses constantly in front of my young quarterback. I'd much rather have a Quint Kubiak come in that I believe is a great offensive mind, you know, that can come in and give stability to the quarterback position, then take the chance that Cliff Kingsbury is your offensive coordinator, but after one good year,
right,
he goes out and hits somebody else.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting way to look at it. Well, you know, I think that's, it's important, you know, but it's less important than the quarterback being good. So I will prioritize that first and then work from there. By the way, just on Indiana, they're 7.5 point, now at 8. At a lot of spots, as an 8-point favorite in the national championship game. We had your colleague Dan Wolken on earlier. This has been a very Yahoo show here. You like that, by the way, that yodel?
Yeah,
you like
that? That yodel was quality. That was a quality yodel.
Throwback Yahoo joint. And he said his opinion was that the fact that Indiana's in this game means it doesn't send a message. It's just a freak thing. It's just a freak thing that happened because you had an older coach that hadn't made all the money of his career yet and was still hungry. Do you agree with that, or do you think there is some message that Indiana being in this game in the favorite sense?
Yeah, no, I think Dan, respectfully, who comes on daily a lot with us, I think Dan's wrong. This is new modern college football, because look at it right now. As the last time I looked about a week ago, Indiana next year had the 33rd ranked recruiting class for high school kids. So, like, Indiana's methodology is how do we go to the transfer portal, get kids that have played a lot of football, and then figure out how to really develop them in our system, our way. So as much as, you know, we saw in the broadcast, they kept showing 5-star recruits and 4-star recruits. Well, that's not really Indiana's way to build. Their way to build are, you know, 3-star recruits, but people in the transfer portal that they believe can actually go ahead and do the dang thing, right? And then they develop them the right way. Cignetti's been brilliant with that. I think it's a much different approach. And also, I think it just speaks to the fact that there are no advantages anymore. And you can't just pry, well, I can't do this. I mean, the fact is, part of it's Mark Cuban, part of it's the most living, I thought this was a crazy stat, that Indiana has the most living alumni in the United States. So, like, you think about, there's a huge alumni base that's all donating money, Cuban's donating money, but we've seen it for Vandy. Part of the reason Vandy's turned around is a very affluent fan base has turned around and started to donate to the program. So, you know, I think Dan's wrong. I think the future of college football is, if you want it, you got to figure it out with the right guys, but you can get it any. It doesn't matter where your school is located anymore. It doesn't matter whether or not it's a pipeline for talent. What matters is you have the right salesperson in the room that can make the most and enough money to be able to do it the way you want to do it.
I'm with you 100%. What's it look like if Miami's winning this game? What's it got to look like for Miami to come out on the winning side of this one?
Well, Miami's got to play flawless football, and they didn't against Ole Miss, by the way. Like, dropped interceptions, all of those things. They're going to have to disguise coverage really well against Mendoza. They're going to have to hope that Mendoza makes a couple of mistakes. And I think Carson Beck is going to have to be every bit what he was plus more. I got to give Carson a lot of credit. He played so much better in this run than he was at Georgia. But he's still a guy that's given away some football games. So he's got to be really – against an Indiana defense that has way more speed than anyone wants to give him credit for, and an Indiana defense that moves around a lot pre-snap, Carson Beck is going to have to be flawless in this football game. I know it's really about how well they run the football with Miami. I get that. But I think, you know, you're going to have to be looking at a line where Carson Beck is 21-27 with 2 touchdowns, no picks in an efficient football game where, you know, Mendoza made a couple of mistakes. Guys, I think there's a real chance that Indiana wins this game by 3 touchdowns.
Me too.
We're talking to Jason Fitz here from Yahoo Sports. All right, lots of games from the wild card round. Still one more left tonight. Texans Steelers. Which win said the most about that team? Like, which result to you was the most convincing from the weekend?
Well, it's funny because I don't know that it said the most, because, like, look, the Rams weren't great against the Panthers. I think that's a fair take. I think the Chargers are so broken that I really give the Patriots defense a lot of credit for the way they just shut them down. But that's a broken Chargers team. To me, I sneakily think the Bears, and the fact that Caleb Williams was not good for 3 quarters, and then in the 4th quarter, they just – it is so reminiscent, 80s wrestling analogy I've made before, but of Hulk Hogan, drop the arm once, drop the arm twice, right before it drops the 3rd time on the sleeper hold, he just starts shaking his arm, he starts rising up. That's what Caleb Williams and the Bears do. There's a weird thing about confidence in these situations. Caleb has it, the Bears have it. That's scary. Man, that is scary to me, because when Caleb plays the way he played in the 4th quarter, they look almost unbeatable. When he plays the way he played through 3 quarters, they look terrible. So now you got a Rams team that's going to have to go to Soldier Field and play in what they're saying right now is going to be, what, a wind chill of 2 degrees?
Yeah.
Outdoors, Stafford's 1-9 in cold weather games against a Bears team that has enough plucky belief. I think Chicago really – I'm not sure that Chicago is – replicatable year in and year. I don't know if this is the new Bears. I just think this year the Bears have showed us they're kissed by the football gods, and that means something.
I'm with you. We do feel kissed right now. It feels a lot like Washington last year going to the NFC Championship game.
100%, 100%.
It is still like the 29th ranked defense in the league, and if it's not turning you over, it's usually giving up a ton of yards. Here's my question for you. It's on the other side. It feels like now may as better do it now, Josh Allen. When you look around at who's left in the AFC, the lack of experience, you're looking around, and he was a guy that put it upon his shoulders there this weekend. This just feels like now's the time, Josh Allen. There's no Burrow, there's no Jackson, there's no Mahomes. You better go get it. Do you agree?
Oh yeah. By the way, they just beat the Jags.
The Jags defense has been wildly opportunistic all year. The Jags defense is good. They just beat, as much as everybody today is talking about the Bills got to go now, they got to go to Denver. Well, they just took on a Jags team. I know that we don't, you know, cross over a lot here, but the Jags beat Denver in Denver.
Yes.
So I would argue that they beat a team capable of that. Also, the Jags have the number one rushing defense in the NFL, which the broadcast reminded us of 4,732 times. The Jags had a better capability of making the Bills one-dimensional than I believe the Broncos do. So, yeah, I mean, certainly right now, if I had to bet my house on one team in the AFC, it's still going to be the quarterback I trust the most. Josh Allen is just in a different world. I honestly think Josh Allen's the best player in the NFL right now. And it's a shame that the Bills make him work so hard for every single thing that he gets. But, man, yeah, if not now, then when? Certainly. But if they don't win it, that's not going to be because of Josh. I'm not even sure it's 100% because of Sean McDermott, although he'll be on the hot seat. I think the Bills organization needs to look in the mirror and ask themselves, did they ever really give Batman the next piece? Did they ever give him Robin, or did they just expect him to be superhuman by himself every day? I think the Bills have done just about everything they can to screw this dang thing up. But, yeah, I like Josh Allen to get to the Super Bowl this year.
All right, we got to get your thoughts on the situation that's unfolding here locally. Never thought that it would get to this point, but here we are. Ja Morant basically on the trade block. The Grizzlies are entertaining offers. They say they're not going to just take anything for him, but obviously it represents a shift from, you know, just a year ago when they said this organization is not trading Ja Morant. What do you make of all of it? You know, there's certainly some outrage here locally that they would even consider moving a star of his caliber. Where do you sit on it?
Yeah, you know, the funny thing is, remember when Luka and Trey were drafted and it was like, wow, those two unbelievable gets, and now both have been traded by their teams. And remember when Zion was drafted and it was like, oh, Zion, it's going to be everything. And Ja was drafted and it's like, oh, these are the guys that are going to turn their teams around. And, you know, in each of these cases, it just hasn't worked. So I think you got to figure out a couple of things. Number one, you can't be afraid that somebody's just going to land and land into a better spot. Like, you don't stay in a relationship because you're worried that your girl's going to date somebody better, right? That doesn't happen. So, you know, you've got to kind of look at it and say, what's best for Memphis? And we talked a lot about this on Yahoo Sports Daily on trying to figure out the right thing for Ja, because I've been squarely in the, they can't trade him. Well, at some point, you got to win basketball games. And as much as what everybody comes to in, I think in New Orleans and Memphis particularly, when we talk about trading players, what I constantly hear is, got to sell tickets, got to make sure you get butts in the door. I don't disagree with that, but you know what really long-term sold tickets for Oklahoma City? It wasn't the stars they hadn't lost or even the stars they drafted. It was winning basketball games, right? And so at some point you look around and say, let's take the jersey off, let's take the name off, and let's just blind resume the player. He's not available enough. When he is available, they haven't figured out a way to win enough. They have other young pieces, you know, that they feel like they can build around. I guess I hear everybody on saying you can't trade him. He's what makes us relevant. But to me, he went through a lot of years of OKC not being relevant, and now nobody's better, right? So I just kind of feel like you have to decide at some point, are you willing to just be a conversation piece, or do you want to be a great basketball team? Because the longer we stick around with John Memphis, the more it's clear. No matter what the reason is, John Memphis doesn't really scare most of the NBA, right? Like, people aren't sitting there right now saying, oh, my God, we better get ahead while we can because, man, John Memphis is going to make a run by the end of the year. You know what I mean? So, like, at some point, to me, even though I hate the thought of trading stars, they're not winning basketball games. They're not going to win enough basketball games with Ja to make it worth it. If you can get a haul, and I'd ask for a haul, but if you can get a haul, I'd trade him, and I would just start the long process of showing the city that what we're going to build is an actual basketball team, not a star that people want to come out to see.
I think you bring up a point that is absolutely worth reiterating here. Oklahoma City. Oklahoma City had not one, not two, three future MVPs on its team at one time, and Russell Westbrook and James Harden and Kevin Durant. They all left, walked away, traded, whatever. And what happened? 10 years after that happens, they win a damn championship in a small market, which goes to show you that as long as you draft well, And as long as your front office is operating at a super high level, and John Moran is not even close to those guys in terms of production. Like, life will go on. I'm not saying that the Grizz will go on and win a championship, but you can be a playoff factor. You can be a team that maybe makes the Western Conference Finals. Like, if Oklahoma City can survive that, certainly the Grizzlies could survive trading John Morant.
When Oklahoma City went through that transition, I asked somebody with the team at the time when I was with ESPN, I asked somebody, how scared are you of becoming irrelevant? And the answer I got that I will never forget is, we want to be relevant for the right reasons. And I just think that's the thing. Like, how do you get relevant for the right reasons? You draft the right way. You build the thing the right way. I mean, this is no longer the big three's NBA. This is a draft and develop depth NBA. Indiana showed it to you. OKC showed it to you. Denver has shown it to you. Like, look at the last several champions and ask yourself, how have the last several champions got there? The methodology to it is not, I'm going to go get KD and I'm going to go, or I'm going to get LeBron, or like, that's just not, that works for a period. In the modern period, what works is drafting, developing, having depth, making sure you got 10 guys that can roll out there, making sure that you've got, you know, enough star power to get you there, but also enough depth to make sure that you're a matchup nightmare for everybody. The reason OKC is going to win it this year is because nobody can match up for OKC for two straight weeks for an entire game, because they are built better top to bottom. Has nothing to do with just having SGA, and has everything to do with the way they're built.
Yeah, Fitz, man, great stuff as always, man. Thank you.
Thank you so much, brother. Have Appreciate a great week. You.
Congratulations, boys. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yes,
thanks,
sir. Man. He is Jason Fitz from Yahoo. Yeah, I mean, if you look at what the OKC Thunder did, they traded Russell Westbrook in 2019 to Houston for Chris Paul. You know, you wound up, you know, drafting Jalen Williams, Nikola Topic, who hasn't played yet, but I think will be a good one. You get Shai Gilgeous-Alexander via that Paul George trade. I mean, you know, you do have to finesse, and you have to, you know, whip around, and you have to be very good at your job in the front office.
Mm-hmm. Both trading and drafting.
Correct.
Sam Presti was great at both in rebuilding it after the first iteration of it, and made some shrewd moves. Kleiman is really good on the drafting side of it, and the finding second round. You know, finding first round value in the second round, it's the trade side that he's going to have to get licked if he's going to be Sam Presti in terms of rebuilding it in a way that's, you know, back to contender form. Now, you'd say Sam did more. They made a finals with KD and those guys.
Right.
You were a two seed for a little while. You won one playoff. So it's not quite in terms of accomplishment. You know, what you're rebuilding,
it's not
the
close.
Same. That said, the comeback has to be how you rebuild it, both with picks and the right trades, the way Presti did, has to be.
Yep.
And that's the key, is that can ZK do what Presti did, especially from that trade side,
yep,
and hit on the right trades to rebuild it the right way. That's the key.
Yep, absolutely. All right, we will come back, and we will wrap this thing up here on the first J&J show of the new era. Stick around, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Black Tie Moving has changed the moving in the city of Memphis. When you're moving, you're not just moving things. You're moving pieces of your life. They get that at Black Tie Moving. Whether you're moving cross town, cross country, they've got you covered. I've used them twice, and I will gladly use them again if I need to, because they're professional. They show up on time. They stay on budget. They are the best. Ask Jeff Calkins. Well, you can't anymore, but you can just tweet him. You can tweet him. He'll tell you the truth. 316-6196 is the number. Black Tie Moving, change and moving in the city of Memphis. Call today. All right. Steelers, Texans. Could be. I mean, if it, you know, breaks the right way, maybe the last game for Mike Tomlin in Pittsburgh. I don't know.
Possibly.
Possibly. That's hanging over all of it. Are the Texans sick enough to go into Pittsburgh and win on the road?
They are, because of their defense and because of Will Anderson, that defensive line. They can get the kind of pressure that, you know, really, Pittsburgh can't afford to let get around Aaron Rodgers at 42 years old. That's why they average less than 3 seconds per pass in terms of getting it out on the quickest in the NFL. And that's going to be the thing. Can Houston get that pressure in that quick a time? And my guess is they can.
Right.
That's how good Will Anderson is. One of the best game record.
I've been torn on this one, because I do think Texans is the easy side here. But, you know, maybe with Calvin Austin back, and man, I just feel like Aaron Rodgers is going to be a sitting duck.
Mm-hmm.
I just, you know, that's just the image that I see.
Houston's not that kind of defense that just lets you sit there and pick it apart. That's typically, they're going to push, they're going to create the pressure. And so Yeah. Can this Pittsburgh team adjust? Shout out to not just Calvin Austin, but Gainwell. Kenneth Gainwell has been tremendous, especially in terms of as a receiver for Aaron Rodgers. I think he had 8 receptions in that win over Baltimore, the former Tiger, along with Calvin Austin. He'll be key tonight. But that's the thing, is how is Pittsburgh with, you know, Metcalf's there, but who are the other guys that help you adjust to the kind of pressure Houston's going to put on you? Because that game plan that you got, you can pretty much throw that out the window. They're not that, this is not a defense that just lets you dictate what you're going to do to it. It does the dictating.
Yeah, I mean, there are people who are saying that Tomlin's coaching a little more aggressively. I don't know if I've seen that, but maybe. You know, he's going to have to in this game. There's just no doubt about it, him and Arthur Smith. And I mean, I guess if you get 4 to 5 amazing Aaron Rodgers throws, that's enough, maybe. But
better keep him upright
over the course of a game. I think that's going to be a lot tougher to do. So, you know, we shall see with that. And then again, around the NFL, Matt LaFleur apparently is going to be retained.
Yeah, I thought we had finished him off, but apparently not. I mean, you got to keep in mind, what he make 2 NFC Championship games his first 2 years, and he's still living on some of that.
He would have had
plenty of suitors had Green Bay decided to move on.
Yeah.
But I think he's lost 3 of his last 4
right
now in the playoffs. So since they've gone all in, Jordan Love paying him as part of that, going after Michael Parsons, you know, you haven't had the playoff success. And to lose to a team like the Bears, which is just getting started, you thought might be enough, but apparently they're going to renegotiate and get him an extension.
Yeah, I mean,
that's the word.
I feel like blowing that lead. I think he's in pretty rare company, right?
You got to be.
I mean, was y'all were down 15 in the fourth?
21-6.
21-6 in the fourth quarter.
Yep.
I feel like that does not happen in the playoffs. I mean, you know, it's just, especially with the way teams run the ball and, you know, play clock, like, you know how hard it is to do that. And they had, I mean, they were up 12 with what, 6 or so?
Mm-hmm. Scored again.
Yeah. I mean, that
should have put us away.
That was like, there was this great video out there. Have you seen it? I'm sure you have. Of like the probability, the win probability.
That was 98%, 2% for us.
But it's like synced with the plays as they're happening. So like you could see like with each play, that percentage dips or goes up or dips or goes up. And I think it got down to like 4% or 3%. After they scored that touchdown to go up 28-16. And then it's just fun to watch that thing go with every, like, that 4th and 8, that missed kick.
Like, that's that before the 4th and 8, it was like 2% for the Bears.
Yeah.
That's where that thing flips.
Yeah.
And then the Iceman cometh. Now, you don't like Iceman, the nickname, but
it doesn't. Well, the only reason I don't like it is because
fitting
it doesn't really have like an alliteration. You know, I like alliteration, you know, but again, it's your quarterback, it's not mine.
My
I don't have
quarterback
to like
with 7. Fourth quarter comeback.
And if you like it,
I mean, he's doing the little trade, icy thing. He did it after the Green Bay touchdown a couple of weeks ago, and he was out there playing in the cold again. Folks were trying to mock us.
The Niners.
Green Bay was trying to mock us. The Niners, the Detroit did it, but Green Bay was trying to do it again yesterday. We nipped that in the bud. We nipped it in the bud by beating them. But Detroit was doing it to us in their regular season finale. They beat us.
Yep. And
folks want to steal the Kobe ISO celebration.
I like the grater thing they're doing. The grater's pretty.
It's genius.
That's fun.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's over now.
Caleb grating real cheese. That was fun.
Yep.
Sorry to Barb. Barbara, she's a fantastic, loyal listener and friend of ours. And I hate to see them. Did talk to my uncle. He's Packers fan number 2 behind Barb. And listen, for Les Smith, his brother, you know, seeing him has on in the year. That all this
I thought
turned
about him last night.
If you're going to lose to anybody, the Bears.
That's right.
And his brother, the Smiths, in the year they've had.
Uncle Stevie.
He was happy enough to do it. Uncle Larry, fool, you're getting them mixed up.
Well, how is Uncle Stevie?
Uncle Stevie's doing fine, Johnny. He's not dead. You seem to be waiting on an update. When
no,
he's
I just
be moved.
I just
to stop that. Let him live what he's got left.
I yes. witnessed I know, the great fall.
Still living.
But he is with us, and we think about him.
I think Ed Eccles is still with us as well.
Yes.
Thanks shout out to Ed Eccles. Shout out to the Bears. Shout out to Les Smith. It's going to do it for us today. Thanks, of course, to Jeff Goodman. Thanks to Dan Wolk. Thanks to Jason Fitz. Jeffrey and company up next. Don't miss it. For Jason, I'm John. We're gone.